You're listening to a podcast from the Cinema Geekly Podcast Network. We're the geeks you deserve and the ones you need right now.
Today we are canceling the apocalypse!
Welcome to Unscripted Parenthood, raising kids, watching films, and reviewing them as well. Mm-hmm. It's Anthony and Aurora, and we are back to talk another movie about parenting, and mostly about how it relates to parenting. Mm-hmm. This time, it is the 1993 comedy drama, or dramedy, if you will, yeah. Mrs. Doubtfire by Chris Columbus. Very famously, the...
You said 1993, and that seems
so old. An ancient film to... Our kids. I mean,
and the fact that we both were born before that.
Oh, yeah. We're old.
Dinosaurs, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Literally. And they're dinosaurs in this movie, kind of. But we are the things that they're making fun of.
Yes.
In this movie. So this is directed by Christopher Columbus, not the guy who... didn't actually discover America, mm-hmm. but landed mm-hmm. kind of close to America and yes. is very problematic. No, this is the film director who I didn't even realize directed this movie. I remember him more for directing like Home Alone or the mm-hmm. first couple Harry Potter films, things like that. Mm-hmm. This movie is, of course, if you're remotely aged in any way and not a youngster, you would already know who this movie stars, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Robin Williams is mm-hmm. the star of this movie, along with Sally Field, Pierce Brosnan, and Harvey Fierstein, who plays Robin Williams' brother in this movie and gets some of the best lines in the whole movie. Before we talk about the movie, like in depth, in doing research for this, because I never had to do research for Mrs. Doubtfire before. Every time I've ever watched it, I was probably like young and a kid. And I haven't watched it in a very long time. Mm-hmm. So when reading about this, I learned for the very first time that this movie was based off of a book.
What?
Yep. Oh, you're finding out now too.
Yes.
Called Madam Doubtfire. That came out in 1987, published in the UK, and some of it is similar, but so much of it is different.
So is that why Mrs. Doubtfire is English?
I think so, yeah. In the book, she's Scottish.
I see.
Okay. But the characters are all named the same. In the books, they're Daniel and Miranda Hilliard. They get separated. She's a successful businesswoman. He's an out-of-work actor. Although in the book, he's an out-of-work actor moonlighting as a nude model for an amateur art class.
Why did I leave that out?
I mean, can you imagine the scenes that Robin Williams could have done?
That would have been amazing.
And in the book, she is the mother is very angry at him and says... like that he's irresponsible and a bad father and a poor role model, which is not how he is portrayed in the film.
That gives, I mean, we'll talk about it, but that gives then a little bit of context on why she's that way in the movie.
Yeah. In the book, the two older kids realize who it is right away. Here,
as it should have been, it should have happened.
Honestly, like as a kid, I remember it being very convincing, and now as adult, as an adult watching it now, I'm like, it's kind of obvious.
Yes.
Like, how do they not put it together?
Nobody said you kind of look like my dad. Nobody said that.
Even with the prosthetics and stuff, it took one of the kids barging in on him while he was peeing. Which, by the way, rude. If you see the bathroom door closed, knock on the door.
Yes.
Bathroom doors should have locks on them. Anyway, he is a. From there, the book kind of follows the movie pretty closely that he isn't a very good cook, but he is trying to prove that he can be a good parent. And he proves to be like a really good gardener and willing to discipline the kids, that sort of stuff. And in the book, though, this is where things deviate dramatically. Daniel's art class, I'm just going to read this to you because it's just amazing to me. Daniel's art class needs to find a place to convene, and Miranda grudgingly offers the use of her home. After Miranda discovers Daniel's secret, they have a terrible argument in front of the children, culminating in the three kids announcing that they hate both of their parents. Realizing how bad things have gotten, Miranda finally resolves the situation by giving Daniel a steady job as her gardener so that he can continue to be around their children.
Oh, God. No.
That's so crazy to me. No idea. So the film version, which I feel like more people are going to be familiar with, is kind of similar in the sense that...
less nudity.
Kinda. I mean, do you consider the bodysuit nudity? Because then, yeah, I guess.
I consider that nudity, although there's that scene where he's like putting it on and there's the two kids watching.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, mom! Yeah. I would, honestly, that's fair. So it is about, Daniel is like a voice actor who quits on, he quits his job on, honestly, like.
A pretty good reason.
Pretty good reasons, like, he's voiceover, doing a voiceover for like a cartoon where the character he's voicing over just starts smoking and starts really enjoying it.
Yep.
And instead he's like, ah, I'm going to have beet cancer. And he's like, we shouldn't be promoting this to kids, guys.
Right. Yes. And I don't know. I mean, side note here. I don't know if you've watched like Looney Tunes after like you've been an adult, but there are some very problematic cartoons.
All the old ones.
Oh, that I watched when I was little, that I didn't realize until I was older that they were like pretty violent and
violent,
not good for kids.
Promoting all sorts of terrible things to kids.
Yeah, and there was smoking. I remember seeing like cartoon smoking.
Tons of racial stereotypes, smoking, drinking,
yes,
all sorts of stuff. Anyway, the children are. The same, Lydia, Chris, and Natalie. And Miranda works as an interior designer and is a bit of a workaholic. And they, like, when I saw this, like, when I saw their fight and when they decide to sort of break things up, to me, it just felt like, you know, these are two people who... just grew apart from one another. Like, obviously something worked for like a long time, but they grew apart as people. And Robin Williams' character is more like loosey-goosey, I guess, whereas she is more like strict and regimented, and he kind of goes between jobs. But I mean, I feel like part of me is, so this is like the 1993 comedy of it all, I guess. But part of me is like, look, if you fell in love with a guy who is an actor, you know that part of being an actor is like, you're going to go between jobs.
100%.
This is part of what, this is the, that's part of the life.
Yes.
So I don't know why she's like, he's always between jobs. I'm like, yeah, because that's like his, that's the profession. Like lots of actors are. Yeah.
And that's why I say, you know, now that you're explaining that this is based on a book and you describe that character in the book, it kind of makes sense now why. Because throughout the movie, I was like, why is she so hard on him?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying he's perfect, but she's also not perfect. She also sucks.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when at the end when the kids in the book are like, you guys, we hate all of you. It's like, yeah, fair.
Yeah.
You guys are right to be mad.
Yes.
She's but you know, and she's like obsessed with her job, and between these two things they just sort of started growing apart, and it makes sense that she would, you know, it does make sense that they would want to split. And he never does take things seriously, which is also part of her thing, is like, you know, when we were younger, I like, this was charming and I loved it and you make me laugh, and making me laugh is a good thing, but like, you never take anything seriously, which is a problem. Life is serious. You can't treat it like a joke all the time. So I can see where it would split. When they split, they went to court for custody. And like, here, at least this is where it differs from the book, he's clearly absolutely head over heels for his kids, loves them, adores them, isn't a bad father at all.
No, it's just that
the relationship fell apart. And that's when it came very relatable to me, because like, that's my life. You know, I love my kids to death. There's nothing, if I could do something for them, there's nothing I wouldn't do for them. That sort of thing. And it's just the thing that happened in this courtroom scene that scared me was like, you don't have a place to live and you don't have a steady job. So you don't get to see your kids at all. And I'm like, would that actually happen? I mean, I get that you don't have a place to stay. Like, I sort of get it, but it wasn't like he was homeless. He did have a bad father. Yeah, he was staying. I do believe he was staying with his brother and his brother's husband or partner. They probably couldn't legally get married then. I do like that they called him Aunt Jack.
I thought
that was awesome.
Yeah. There were some pretty progressive things in this movie.
I was a little surprised. I do love that scene when he goes to his brother and he's like, make me a woman. And he's like, finally. So funny. I've been waiting for you to come out.
Your point that you're making right now, later in the movie, towards the end, she tells him, you know, I was angry. That's why she didn't speak up at court. And I was like, it's not about you. This is about your kids.
This is about, somebody who went through that process, and it was honestly a brief process, shockingly brief. And we did, and it was during COVID. So we did the court meeting over the phone. I did the court meeting from, like, you know, 3 feet to my left from where I'm sitting now. You know, it's weird hammering that out. Like, I'm in a situation where things were very amicable, which it felt like things were amicable between them as well. Like, it didn't feel contentious. But to me, I don't know, this is one of those things where it felt like the ruling was done in order to make the movie happen.
Yeah, it was pretty harsh.
I don't think, because he did have a roof over his head. He was staying with his brother. Until he found a job, which he did, and then he got his own place. Because they had to go, like, extreme. It's like, she gets full custody, you get 1 day of visitation.
Yeah,
that's, which was nuts.
That's nuts.
That was insane. I'm pretty sure that would not hold up to scrutiny.
And I was watching this with my husband, and I was like, when I saw this as a kid, I didn't fully understand the adult part of it.
Yeah.
And now that I'm watching it as an adult, I'm like, I totally understand why he did what he did. Like, I could not imagine not being able to see my son, or just seeing him like once a week. And I get it. Like, it's maddening.
Oh, 100%. And he concocts this plan after, honestly, after a rude, moment, like on his 1 day a week, she shows up early while they're still eating dinner
and dropped them off late,
and then he notes that he dropped them off an hour late and then showed up an hour early, and she's like, Daniel, don't do this right now. I'm like, what?
Yeah,
Like, don't give me that. You drop them off an hour later.
And I don't know if you remember, but she comes in and she's like, I don't have time for this. I have to go to the bank and I have to do this. And I was like, well, go and do it.
Go do those things.
Just leave the kids with him while you do that.
Yeah, it's not like you're leaving him with a murderer or something. It's their dad who loves them and they love him. Yeah. Like, go
he's
do your
feeding errands. Them at the moment. They're eating. Like, why are you, like, making them leave?
Yeah, go do your errands or whatever. Like... Like, she has her reasons. I feel like sometimes they're trying to vilify Sally Field's character a little too much.
Oh, 100%.
She absolutely has her reasons, but also they're both kind of jerks. but when she reveals that she's, you know, looking for, like, a nanny or whatever, he purposefully changes the number, the phone, like, a couple of the numbers and the phone number for the ad. Mm-hmm. So this way nobody will call the right number, and... he'll just call with a bunch of different voices, and she never figures it out that it's him calling all these times. She's lived with this dude. Look, I don't know. I can't say for sure.
This was before caller ID.
I don't know. Yeah, number one, that. But number two, I don't know anybody who's a voice actor professionally. I know Ben does some voice work and stuff, but, like, I don't know if he does voices like that. So I can't say this for certain, but I can only imagine that somebody who does this for a living and they live with somebody like their partner, like, your partner has probably heard every voice you can do in all the years that you've lived together, probably to the point of annoyance, like, don't do the voices anymore. So, like, how she didn't realize it was him doing a voice, I don't know. But the plan was he was going to make all these phone calls playing these characters that are all clearly terrible choices. Like, one of them was like, you know, I don't mean to be crude, but, like, you know, if I have to, like, wail on him, like, you know, what's the stopping point for that? And then at the end he calls as, like, the Mrs. Doubtfire character, who is too perfect to be real, and of course she hires her, and then he does all of this stuff with, like, the prosthetic makeup, because his brother works, he does that stuff. So they do this bodysuit and the prosthetic makeup so he can go live this life and be with his kids. Which,
I don't know how he was not a sweaty mess the whole time.
I have no idea.
Sweating so much.
Latex and a bodysuit?
Wig?
Wig and clothes?
That's crazy. And he's doing, like, work. He's cleaning and cooking and taking care of kids. Like, that's I would be, that whole mask will be falling off my face.
Yeah. And literally,
I would be so sweaty.
I mean, so I see what the movie is trying to do, which is they're showing us, like, just how hard he is willing to work to be the father to his kids. Like, he gets up in the morning, he goes and does his day job, and when the day job is done, he goes and puts on this outfit and becomes this character so he can work the rest of the day to be around his kids.
Taking public transportation also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being hit on by
the
loneliest bus driver. Cause, like, that moment where he sees Robin Williams, like, undeniably hairiest legs that have ever existed. And, you know, she covers her legs. And he's like, you know, I kind of like that Mediterranean look. It's natural, just the way God made you. And I'm like, man, this guy is up for anything.
Yeah, he was low at first sight when he saw her.
I can't tell if that's a green flag or a red flag, honestly.
I think it's somewhere in between.
It may be like a beige flag.
It's like
flag.
A yellow.
a very neutral flag. But yeah, like... definitely, and what he's doing is absolutely, like, probably borderline criminal and absolutely weird, deeply weird. The moment the kids find out, again, we go back to that scene with the bathroom. We should put locks on our bathrooms, but
yes,
that's how he found out. And when he tells them, they're weirdly okay with it.
Yeah.
Like, there's a little bit of shock for, like, a minute. And then there's, like, you know, some 90s, very light 90s. Is bigotry the right word?
Yeah.
It makes sense. Like, I was a kid. that around that boy's age in the 90s. So it makes sense. Like, it's period accurate, I guess.
Yeah, he's like,
you don't like wearing that stuff, do you, Dad?
Right.
And to Robin Williams' credit.
He didn't want to give him a hug or anything.
Yeah. He's like, guy stuff. And he's like, yeah, I get it. And I'm like, I'm sitting here like in 2024. I'm like, ugh, very cringy. but accurate. And to Robin Williams' credit, he also is like, some of it's comfortable, but no, I don't wear it all the time. Anyway, like, this is the stuff that makes it, like, this is absolutely going to hurt the grade for, like, parental realism in this, because, like, it's just so out of the box and so weird. The one thing that I guess is upsetting about it, as somebody who is a single parent who does share custody of their kids, the one thing, and I know that I guess they couldn't really do this because of the kind of movie they're making. They only kind of tiptoe into it just slightly, but is the effect that this has on kids. There's absolutely like just a really lovely scene at the end. So jumping to the end of the movie, everyone finds out that Daniel is actually Mrs. Doubtfire. And for some reason, the wife, Sally Field's character, Miranda, is still like, it was deeply weird and concerning. And also, I didn't want to be around him anymore. And he forced his way in and pretended to be this other person and lied to me the whole time. But boy, he really does love his kids.
Yeah.
So maybe.
But she also, like, she was also selfish because she also said, you know, I miss her being around and cooking and cleaning. And I was like, yeah, because it was convenient.
Well, it was convenient, but also I feel like it brought, because she said, like, when they are having this conversation, like, she told him that Mrs. Doubtfire brought out the best in you. Like, it brought out a side of him that she wishes was there when they were together. The side of him that was a little more serious. The side of him that was like, let's take care of stuff. Let's clean up. Let's make dinner. Like, that sort of thing. And, you know, I'm sitting there like, yeah, communication is, like, so important.
Yes.
I mean,
that's the takeaway from this movie.
Oh, 100%.
Communication is key.
It's the most important. It always is. But, you know, anyway, the there's like at the end, he's working at a TV studio, but he's doing like menial work until he gets into the ear of the boss, who thinks he's really funny. And he ends up giving him his own show with like Mrs. Doubtfire, like as a character or whatever. And there's a very sweet thing at the end where Mrs. Doubtfire gets like a letter from a young listener whose parents are split up. And she gives this like really nice speech about, you know, as long as there's still love, like that's the most important thing. People can go for days or weeks or months without seeing each other. But as long as there's love there, like that's the most important thing. And like, don't blame yourself. And like, very important messaging.
Very important. And I've never cried watching this movie until now.
Like,
the ugly cried in that speech.
I mean,
it was very, very good.
I mean, I cried every time the kids lit up and saw their dad and just like ran to them. Like, I know what that's like. I know what it's like to be away from, you know, your kid for a week or 2 weeks and then you get to see them after that time and it's the best feeling in the world. But I wish they could have spent a little more time with, cause like that speech at the end is nice. But like it takes more than that. You can tell a kid not to blame yourself, and it's absolutely 100%. This is just like a fact. It's not the kid's fault. It's never the kid's fault. But the kid is never, ever, ever going to think of it like that. Like, it's mom and dad don't love each other anymore, but that doesn't mean they don't love you. But like, that's not the, I mean, that's true, but that's not the beginning of the end of it. The real problem, the crux of it in the middle, is this is a traumatic event that happens to a kid. Their whole existence, like not like metaphorically their whole life, but literally their whole existence, Yeah. They have known these two people, and they're mm-hmm. there, and they both love me, and they love each other, and this is never going to change. And in some cases, it never does change. My parents have mm-hmm. always been together. So I know plenty of people who, come from families that are split. Yeah. Tons and tons of people, but my family never did. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, I thought that was probably going to be my life too. Mm-hmm. But it didn't end up happening that way. And seeing things happen to my kids and seeing them react in ways and seeing mm-hmm. them silently suffer in ways or in other ways, like you just see them change and you know that it is because of this thing happening. Their world has been upended. It is not mm-hmm. the place that they knew before. It's different. And, now new people are coming in that weren't there before. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel right. And, you start, it's that feeling everyone gets if you have a loved one who passes. If you have a grandmother or grandfather or anyone that you might be close with that could pass away when you're younger or in early adulthood, you get swept over with regret of like, how many times did they say, like, you can go to grandma's house, and you're like, nah.
Yeah.
Because you just take it for granted that it'll always be an option.
Right.
Especially when you're young. And when you're a kid and your parents split, it doesn't matter if they tell you that it's not your fault. You're going to think of, like, every time I was ever bad, that mm-hmm. maybe sparked an argument. Like, maybe if I was better behaved, they wouldn't mm-hmm. have gotten mad at each other. Or even if that doesn't make sense, like in their minds, they're going to think like, I should have been able to do something. Like, how, if they can love me so much, why can't they love each other?
Right.
And it's so difficult on kids. And I wish that they had mm-hmm. spent more time talking about that in the movie. Yeah. And I know why they didn't, because it takes away from the funniness and the haha stuff. Yeah. And they wanted to keep this movie light, so they only kind of just barely sort of touch on it a little bit. And
just a little bit.
And I'm glad that they did. But it didn't go deep enough into it. I think
that the kid that they showed having more of an issue was the oldest daughter.
Yeah, Lydia.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene outside when she apologizes to Mrs. Doubtfire for, like, acting a certain way, and she does say that, it's just she's affected by what's happening with her parents, but that's about the extent of it. Yeah.
Although I do like, it's so 90s, it's so like Full House, like her acting out was like, Mrs. Doubtfire was like, go upstairs and do your homework, and she's like, not until we finish watching Dick Van Dyke. And she turns the TV back on, and Mrs. Doubtfire turns it off, and she turns it back on again. And I'm like, whoa, stepping over the line a little bit here. I do love, that's very much like the Full House rebellion. Yes. That's totally 90s, but like, I get
clean,
it.
Clean rebellion.
Yeah. It's so squeaky clean rebellion. Yes. It's not even like, not until we're done watching Beavis and Butthead. It can't even be that. It has to be the Dick Van Dyke Show. I mean, I'd be like, I love Dick Van Dyke. Yeah, let's finish watching that first. The episodes are only like 20 minutes. So like,
they're pretty short.
why not? Yeah. It's a great show. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It just kills me. Like, that was the rebellion. But hey, they put it in there. She had a change of character. Like, she wasn't, she was acting out, mm-hmm. no matter how silly that acting out is. There's so many scenes in this movie where I'm stunned they didn't realize it was their dad. Like, when they're outside playing soccer. And Mrs. Doubtfire is just like running around. Crazy.
Like, just like when she's doing the interview with Sally Fields.
Yeah.
And she points out, she's like, your way around the kitchen. And she's like, oh, just everything is so organized. And I was like, how do you not realize?
It's like, you know where everything is. It's almost like you've been in here before. Oh, you know, once you've been in one kitchen, you've seen them all. Yeah.
She says something like that. She says something like, I feel like I've known you for a long time or something like that. And I was like, yes.
You have. You
have. Yeah,
It's a really weird movie.
I mean, if you've been married to someone for 14 years,
mm-hmm.
there's no way you will not
recognize. Yeah.
You will not recognize them like this. There's no way.
If your husband on like a costume, even like a well-designed costume, like
even if it's like his whole, let's say that he puts on a costume where his whole body and face is covered.
Yeah.
Just by the way he walks, I know he is him.
Yeah. You just know. What I
mean? Yeah. Yeah, you just know because I've been with him for a long time.
Yeah, you just know.
Yes.
There's a lot of things that you have to ignore in order for movie to work.
Yes.
It is undeniably like a classic.
It is.
Obviously, yeah. There's some stuff that probably doesn't hold up super well.
Mm-hmm.
I think just in general, like nowadays you wouldn't put Dude Looks Like a Lady in this, because
mm-hmm.
That song, boy, the things you don't realize are just kind of like shitty when you're a kid. You have no idea all the times I sang along to that song when I was a kid.
Yep.
Such a fun
song.
There
were a lot of scenes also about bathrooms and going to the men's bathroom or the women's bathroom. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that will fly now.
Yeah. There's some stuff that really just wouldn't work a whole lot. But then there was like there's some stuff that was weirdly progressive in the movie too. So it was just a weird mismatch of stuff.
Yeah, I will say that I did appreciate being a 90s movie. I did appreciate that they kind of played with gender roles.
Mm-hmm.
And it was refreshing to see a dad being so in love with his kids that he did anything to
even be this with crazy them.
Because,
stuff. Yeah.
Because, you know, in the 90s and 80s, like most of the movies that you watch, they don't have that narrative. And it's,
no.
You know, they kind of like perpetuate gender roles where the woman is the one taking care of the kids and the man is, you know, going to work. And in this one, they flipped it.
Yeah.
And I did appreciate that.
It's rare. It's rare to have movies where like the dad is the tender one.
Yes.
Or the more emotionally available one or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's mm-hmm. pretty uncommon. Usually if the wife is portrayed as more emotionally unavailable, the husband is as well. Like both of the parents are robots or whatever.
Right.
So it's weird. It's refreshing to see that. It was refreshing to see a gay couple in a non like offensive or not used for comedic mm-hmm. purposes. They were just the closest it came was them. It was like Robin Williams calling them aunt and uncle. But it was done in like not a humorous way. It's just like that's just what we call them, and like there's no big deal about this. Like there's no real mention made of it. And in truth, like they get some of the best scenes are with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
They get all the best lines and all of the best jokes, really, or the stuff that made me laugh the most. Mm-hmm. So apparently, there were 30 minutes of scenes deleted from this movie.
Oh.
Which I did not realize.
I will say that scene, the scene where when the caseworker goes to his apartment and he has to switch between himself and Mrs. Doubtfire has been forever one of my favorite scenes in movies.
Yeah.
I love that scene so much.
I don't know why. I don't know why. Probably my brain's just broken into a million pieces, but for some reason I kept thinking about the Principal Skinner steamed hams scene with Superintendent Chalmers. This is a very different. It's a very different situation.
Yeah.
But for some reason, my mind just kind of kept going back to that, where he has to like run in and out of the room and then come up with explanations for like why.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's a great episode of The Simpsons. forget I said that. But yeah, that he had to like kind of come up with it. The weird part is like he was so done for in that scene with like the caseworker, and somehow he lied his way through it, and she just believed him.
Yeah.
In a way that doesn't seem very believable to me, but it's a comedy, so in comedies things like that can happen. Just one of many instances where he should have probably been busted way earlier than he was. But yeah, ultimately I had fun watching this, like just a good time, like a fun movie. It's still, I would say it largely still held up. I was worried that it might have crumbled completely, but it's really not, outside of a few moments. And at least one or two moments that feel just accurate for the time that it took place in. I would say a fun movie.
I mean, we can both agree that the biggest lie in the movie is the fact that they own that big house.
Right? Oh, yeah. he's like an in-between voice actor or whatever.
Yeah.
And she does interior design. Like, interior designers make good money. But
they make good money, but that house...
That's
way too much.
You know, it's like the Tanner house... Where it's like Danny Tanner's like a newsman or something or whatever. Yeah. It's like, no way he affords that house.
No. I mean, that's why he has so many people living with him.
I guess they all have to. They all have to chip in. I guess. I bet the kids, after a while too, started like, you know, help dad relieve some of his debt. But no, that's like totally and totally a staple of the time, of like. Like upper middle class people living in like just mansions. Essentially.
Yes.
Craziness.
Crazy. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with like a modest house, everybody.
No.
Anyway, do you have any extra thoughts or final thoughts on the movie, and what would you give it, and how it portrayed parenting and how you would grade that as well?
If I'm just grading the movie by itself, I think that even though it has some things that maybe didn't hold up, time, I think it's still a wholesome movie, and I think it still has a good message.
Yeah.
So for the movie, I will say I will keep it like a 4.
Okay, yeah, that's where I landed with it as well.
In terms of parenting, I'm having a hard time because I agree with everything we've discussed where, you know, what happened is kind of crazy, you know, the extent that he went to be with his kids and, you know, how unrealistic it really is. And also, like, how unrealistic it is, the custody and all that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I understand, like, if you are a parent, you understand where he's coming from. But also, like, I was, throughout the movie, I was very annoyed by Sally Field's character. and I think, I just didn't think that she was portrayed in a way that a mom in the situation would react.
Yeah.
But there are people that parent that way too.
That's why
I'm having a hard time, because even though that's not the type of mom that I am, doesn't mean that there are not people that parent that way as well. So I think that in that aspect, it is portraying different ways of parenting and different ways to approach parenting. So I don't know. I'm conflicted.
For me, I landed at like a really soft 3, because there was some stuff in there like that I absolutely agreed with or related to, and were things that I found, as we talked about, refreshing for a movie of this time. But also, some of the stuff was so insanely ludicrous, and some of the key components, like one of the things that would really have made this interesting is if they touch on what a family splitting up can do to the kids. Weirdly enough, like a movie that's so about the kids or supposed to be about the kids, they don't focus on that aspect at all, which is kind of a disappointment. Yeah. They touch on it, but that's it.
And that's why I'm frustrated with Sally Field's character, because I feel like There are two main things that I was annoyed by. One was that she went out of her way to hire a babysitter when she has their dad available to take care of them.
That's so weird, yeah. Who has the time.
Has the time and wants to do it. Yeah. And then the second thing is, you know, she moved on so quickly with Pierce Brosnan.
I mean, it's Pierce Brosnan. I mean, his name's Bond.
It is Pierce Brosnan, but, you know, one thing is, you know, if I get it, you didn't love your husband for a while, so it's okay. I guess it's fine in this situation to, like, maybe move on that quick.
It's really fast, though.
But the fact that she introduced him to the kids so fast and they were already hanging out with him so much, and, like, I just did not like that.
Practically a family already.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think that the way that they wrote her character was for people to not like her.
Mm-hmm.
Which happened to me.
Yeah. It worked.
It worked. But I will give it a 3 too. Give it a 3. Yeah.
Fun fact, this won the Academy Award for Best Makeup.
Of course.
And it won the Golden Globe Award for Best Movie, Musical, or Comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And Robin Williams won the Golden Globe for Best Actor in a Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. Nice. So there is that. And also, a thing that I didn't realize until I saw the opening credits of this movie is that Howard Shore of Lord of the Rings fame did the music for this. And I'm like, no way.
Wow.
I tried listening in here for things that like sounded like Howard Shore to me, but all the things that sound like Howard Shore to me sound like music from like Hobbiton and stuff. And this was, you know, like a decade before he made those movies. So I didn't hear any of Howard Shore in there, but I was like amazed to see that he was the composer. He actually did all sorts of stuff. He did like Dogma, Kevin Smith's Dogma. He did the music for that movie too. And I'm like, whoa, crazy, crazy times. And I guess it's really only with
him. I have to watch that movie again. I used to love Dogma.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh, it's so good.
Not about parenting, unfortunately. So we won't be talking about it here. although there is a Kevin Smith movie that is about parenting.
There is.
I don't know if it's streaming anywhere. But if it is, we're probably going to cover it in here.
Yeah, we'll look into it.
Yeah. We don't want to say what it is, just in case. We don't want to get people. I don't think anybody would actually be excited for it, because it's not like one of his more popular movies. But I thought it was sweet. I was already a parent when it came out, so I was already like, "Oh, I like this." Anyway, that is not what we're going to watch next time. Next time, we are going to watch a 2021, this is so more recent, a 2021, another dramedy. Apparently, like, everything is either a dramedy or, like, just a really sad drama movie. And we're probably just going to be switching back and forth between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Paul Weitz film starring Kevin Hart and Elfrey. I haven't even looked at the cast until now. Elfrey Woodard is in this. She's awesome. Mm-hmm. Paul Reiser is in this? Huh. Okay. Everybody knows Paul Reiser.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because neither of us have watched this movie. So it's going to be first for everybody. All of us.
Yeah. It's called Fatherhood. It's on Netflix. So if you have a Netflix account, it'll be easy to watch before our next time go around. So yeah, apparently this movie was going to be one of those movies that was scheduled for theatrical release, but then COVID happened and they sold the movie to Netflix. And that's where it showed up. And apparently Kevin Hart is acting against type in this movie. So he is not in this movie as like a super funny, always joking person. Apparently it's going to be more serious. And I have literally never in my life seen Kevin Hart act like that anywhere in a movie or in real life.
It's gonna be refreshing, I think.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how it goes. So I'm excited. Yes. We're going to watch that. In the meantime, though, everybody, head on over to cinemageekly.com, where you can check out the archives of the show And of course, this is a listener-supported podcast, and we would like to offer you a couple of solutions if you'd like to help us out in that regard. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/cinemageekly. We have the merch store, geeklymerch.com. Links for those are in the show notes for this episode. Of course, you can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, Pocket Casts, anywhere you can find a good podcast. Just search for Unscripted Parenthood. Hit subscribe, and that way you can join us next time where we will talk about the 2021 film Fatherhood.